So moving forward, what are those laws that I talked about? Well, there's two of them that I'm going to focus on. There's a third that I'm going to mention, but I'm not going to focus on it. And those two are the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act, which you will probably just hear me refer to as EPSL. I'll leave the A off in all likelihood, or just paid sick leave. And then the Emergency Family Medical Leave Expansion Act, which is a mouthful. So I'm going to call it EFMLA. And then finally, the Corona Aid Relief and Economic Securities Act. That's the CARES Act. Very, 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 very briefly, and the history of these laws, at such as it is laid out in the paper. The first two came first. That was in March. These laws were passed, and they were set to kick on April 1st. And what they did for the first time in this country's history is mandate paid time off. Now, granted, it was in the face of a pandemic and was probably something that was needed. So that is not a criticism, but it is an observation. It was new. We have had time off laws before. We've never had a paid time off law at the national level until now. Even military leave is not paid by default. If the employer gives you a benefit, you can use it, but you're not paid for time off, even for the military. So this was a new thing. Of course, employers who were grappling with the growing crisis, if you remember mid-March, were alarmed to see two federal laws that said they might have to pay their employees for up to 12 weeks of paid time off when they didn't necessarily even have work for them to do. And there was a lot of confusion about how the law was going to approach things like furloughs, people with reduced hours due to COVID. What was that going to do? Was it going to trigger an obligation on the employer? What were the refundable tax credits that were being made available, and how would they work? And unfortunately, what these two first laws did was give employers an incentive to look very hard at whether or not to conduct layoffs and furloughs in advance of April 1st. I don't think that's what the laws were intended to do, but because of the way they were rolled out and the uncertainty that surrounded them, that is in fact what happened. Now, those decisions were probably going to be made anyway, but there was suddenly a date on the calendar by which they needed to be made if you were going to potentially avoid the application of a law that was putting you on the hook for up to 3 months of your employee's pay for leave. That was followed about 9 days later by the CARES Act. And what the CARES Act did is this is what introduced the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, which kind of went the other way and said, tell you what, we will give you a fully forgivable loan to use on things like payroll, provided you get your payroll back up to February levels by the end of, I believe it is June. I always want to confuse June and July, but I'm fairly certain it's June. That gave employers an incentive to keep people on the payroll. At the same time, it introduced an additional $600 in emergency federal unemployment per week for anyone who qualified for state unemployment. So suddenly you had a lot of different incentives running a bunch of different directions. There were two federal laws mandating time off for employees who weren't able to come to work for certain COVID-related reasons. We'll talk about that in a second. And it was going to require payment for them, but there would be an eventual refundable tax credit to offset the cost of those payments. At the same time, any employees who were laid off suddenly saw a bump to the tune of $600 a week in the unemployment they were receiving. And again, you can see the math in the paper, but that means mathematically at around $50,000 a year, you're actually making more through unemployment than through working, at least until the end of July. And then employers had a strong incentive to get people or keep people employed or get them back into the workplace because that would produce a fully forgivable loan. They would have their workforce in place to continue to generate revenue, at least at some level, and be well positioned as we came out of the coronavirus pandemic, which you may recall at the time, as one person put it to me, we didn't know, is this a blizzard, something I'm going to simply hunker down for and wait to pass? Is this winter something that's going to be, it's going to last for a while, it's going to change the way I operate for a while, and I'm going to prepare for the next one, but it too will pass, or is it an ice age? At this point, I think it is safe to say we know it isn't a blizzard, but at the time, we really didn't know how long this was going to go. So with a little more detail, what do these laws actually do? And again, I'm going to try to be quick. The EPSLA, the Emergency Paid Sick Leave, at a high level, this grants 80 hours of paid time off that has to be used prior to the end of this year. It absolutely evaporates at the end of the year. It's one of the shortest laws to ever exist on the books. The hours that you use are per your regular schedule. So if your normal schedule has you working between 9 and 9 on a 3x12 at a hospital, then that's how you would use your employee paid sick leave or your emergency paid sick leave. If, on the other hand, you had a 5x8, you know, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, then that's the way you would use it. That paid sick leave would be paid out at your regular rate. We're going to talk a little bit about what that term means, or two-thirds of that rate, which would depend on which reason you were taking a paid sick time off for. In addition, part-time employees were eligible. And they would be prorated, but they were eligible, which was big. Most employment laws of this flavor, namely the Family Medical Leave Act up to then, had been limited to full-time employees. Speaking of the FMLA, we got the expanded FMLA, the emergency expanded FMLA, which really just created a new trigger for family medical leave. So it was very much like family medical leave in every way, with a few exceptions we'll talk about, but had a new reason for it, which related to school closures. At a high level, the first 10 days of eFMLA is unpaid, although you can use that, that paid sick leave I just got done talking about during those 10 days to get pay. The other two-thirds, the remaining 10 weeks would be paid at two-thirds of your regular rate, and any usage there would count against your FMLA time, and any use of FMLA time would count against your eFMLA time. So the eFMLA really just created a new kind of FMLA, again, with a few other minor alterations. And there are those refundable tax credits that I talked about. We have a lot more understanding around those now, but what they are designed to do is to shift the burden of these payments from the employer, who makes them on the front side, to the federal government, and obviously, ultimately, by extension, the taxpayers, on the backside, because the employer is able to get a refundable tax credit. And when refundable, meaning even if the credit exceeds my liability, I actually get the money. P.S. I am not a tax lawyer. Can't tell you a thing about tax advice, but this is widely accepted at this point. So